Maharaj, can you talk to us about your teaching methods and what is your teaching through?
Yes, we're taking. Sorry,
can you start by saying, I'm Maharaj and I promise to appear at the same time and the teaching that I do, and then get into answering.
I'm Devamrita Swami and I travel all over the world on every continent. I've done that for 25 years now. What I'm doing is taking the ancient knowledge of India and putting it into the contemporary context. Now, why do I do that? Because I see in my travels throughout the world that people are very much anti-religious belief these days. They don't want some kind of religious notions that, shall we say, just sit on top of their head. They want actual experience. Now, it is a fact that the ancient Vedic knowledge of India gives direct experience, but somehow, because it is packaged in old terminology, people may react to it as if this is traditional religion. That's what I'm doing.
Okay, I'm just going to stop you. I'm getting a little bit of distortion of the audio.
Bring it down on the panel.
Give me another test on your audio, please.
One, two.
A little louder.
One, two. Three.
Again, sorry, that's.
One, two, three. Four, five, six.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yes, I'm Devamrita Swami, and I'm Devamrita Swami. I've been traveling on every continent of the world for actually close to 30 years now, and what I'm trying to do is repackage the ancient Vedic knowledge of India into contemporary terminology, because I find throughout the world that many people have a negative reaction to traditional religious belief, as commonly known. And so, in order to expose them to the extraordinary depths of spiritual knowledge that the Vedic system of India offers, I found it necessary to use new terminology and new wrapping so that people can take advantage of what we're offering.
So can you tell me about your techniques that you use?
Yes, we use mantra meditation, we use spiritual community development, we use relationship transformation, and a big part of our spiritual culture is the spiritual kitchen. In other words, the consciousness of the cook affects the ego. So, spiritual cooking is a very important spiritual technique for us.
Okay. So, can you spoke about technique and trying to make this more accessible and more identifiable with the people, with the communities? But can you talk to me about, tell us about your philosophy and your religious practice?
Yes. Our philosophy is that the world consists of energy, spiritual and material. Both energies, spiritual and material, come from the ultimate source. That ultimate source, that we love to refer to as Krishna, is what defines our existence. But when we bounce around in the material world, so to speak, without any connection to that ultimate source, we experience huge problem. So we're all about connecting, or shall we say reconnecting, to that ultimate source of all energy.
Okay. And what makes this different to how it's been done for centuries? What makes you more? Why do you want to identify with people?
That's part of love. Love means communication. You can't have any love without constant efforts to communicate and enhance the relationship. So, what I'm doing is simply what sages have done since time immemorial. They sought to reach the people. It's the same core, but it takes on a different veneer according to time and place and circumstance.
You spoke about the techniques, but can you elaborate on the importance of the yoga and mantra meditation?
Yes. The core of our spiritual practices is transformation through sound, liberation through sound. In other words, sound can condition you to illusion, and sound can free you from illusion. It's all about what kind of sound, what quality of sound characterizes your life.
I mean, I read some scriptures, well, I read some writings of yours and some concepts that you have, and one that stood out for me particularly was your concept on your take on love. Can you tell us about this concept that you have?
Well, we can talk about love as commonly known, if you want to be scientific. Many scientists are saying that love is simply an electrochemical phenomenon. And they have scanned brains of persons who have just fallen madly in love, and they found a surge of blood circulation. So therefore, many scientists are convinced that there's nothing more to love than neurochemicals. I take it that because you're spiritually interested, you seek something beyond that. So there's physical love, there's mental love, and then there's spiritual love. So we're all love driven, but we have to understand what is the love supreme. That is our quest. The physical and mental love supreme.
So can you start by, and that's our quest. Just that bit, can we go?
Can we pick up on looking for that spiritual level that you're looking for?
Okay, so you're going back to the beginning of the paragraph.
You want to wait for the train to pull out?
Yeah, no, it's just pulled in for 4 hours.
Yeah, very quickly. Where did you read about love?
Oh, I hear it. That's quite an interesting thing.
Maybe it just passed through the stop, or the train just passed through.
I don't know.
Let's go for it.
All right. So there's physical.
Yeah.
It's physical love, mental love, and then there's spiritual love. Now, if we're going to be truly satisfied, we should go beyond the temporary physical and mental stimulations and seek the love supreme. Otherwise, we've all had experience of how the mind changes and the body changes. So anytime love is simply based on the body and mind, it's going to be transitory, temporary. You know, the thrill is gone. This time you almost had it all. But if you can understand your non-material identity and non-material emotions and non-material relationships, then you're really into something. So that's actually what real yoga is about.
Can we try that? Maybe just pick up that last bit again.
Yeah.
I just took your paper as well. We thought we had it all, I think.
The thrill is gone. Yes, that's a common experience. The thrill is gone. This time, almost had it all. Anything based on the mind and body is always going to be like that. So if you want true love, you have to connect with the spiritual reality. Otherwise, you're always going to be disappointed. Maybe not today, but tomorrow.
Okay, one maybe silly question, but I'd like to know what your spirituality is.
My spirituality? A genuine spiritual practitioner cannot live without connection to the ultimate source of pleasure. Often we can conceive of the ultimate reality as all-inclusive, the source of all energy. But where do we go to find out about the ultimate source of all pleasure? Real spirituality presents that. Most people, however, don't have a clue about that. They think spirituality means something dry or something mentally speculative. But everyone's professional. So where do we connect where the ultimate pleasure? That is genuine spirituality.
So tell me, what is your vision for the future, for the practice, for the religion, for
my vision for the future is that first, there's a negative. People realize that they cannot have real unity based on the body, based on the land of the earth. Even multiculturalism will not stand. We have to have unity based on our spiritual identity. So, I see that more and more throughout the world, people are tiring of political and economic unity. It's not working. It seems that we've finally come to a stage in humanity's development where we need some genuine unity which is based on the spiritual reality. So that's the future I see. And I think that Krishna consciousness, or traditionally known as bhakti yoga, can play an extraordinary role in that future.
Now, finally, can you tell me more about your lectures here? Not going into too much detail, because we're going to be recording some parts of it. But why did you feel it was necessary to discuss this topic? Why did you feel it was necessary to deal with these issues?
That's a very good question. You see, everyone has a problem handling desire. Some people get frustrated with desire and they want to extinguish it or annihilate it. Free yourself from all desire. I'm sure you've heard that before. That's impossible to do. You cannot kill your desire. What we need to understand is how to desire perfectly. So that is what Bhakti Yoga is about, desire in perfection. Naturally, if you get frustrated in material, so-called pleasure, you'll get sick and tired of desire. I'm sure you've heard many people say, "Oh, I'll never fall in love again," or "I'll never do that again." Next week. Yeah, we go again. Because desire is impossible to repress. So how can we desire perfectly? That is the height of spiritual understanding. That's what the Bhagavad Gita is saying.
Great. Thanks. We're on time.
Okay.
It's 7 o'clock and you can sound to me. We're going to stay and keep the setup for where things are. I wanted to just ask you if there's anything else that you got that you wanted to say, I needed to say that I didn't ask.
Oh, you're the first interviewer that didn't pepper me about my background. I found that refreshing.
I wanted to just deal with
why. Yeah, that's the first time in 30 years I found it very refreshing. How did you understand? How did someone like you start doing what you're doing here?
I think the focus is more on the practices.
That's very good.
I got the impressions of that. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's been a wonderful stay of day with you and with all the devotees. And they're just amazing, friendly and helpful. And just
great. Very interesting group, yes.
Yes.
A mixture of everyone and everything.
Quite a mix of multicultural Kirtan and stuff.
Yes, yes. I think it's very interesting from that point of view.
Yeah.